Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. I'm Dr. J, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. So keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left. Speaking today with Armin Saginian. Armin Saginian is the director of New Horizons, an Iranian outreach program of the Council for Secular Humanism. New Horizons aims to promote the ideals of secularism, democracy, and rational inquiry to people of Iranian origin. Welcome, Mr. Saginian.
Thank you very much.
Now,
pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. I forwarded recently a statement from a group of free thinkers and humanists who are associated with the Institute for the Secularization of Islamic Society, forwarded that statement to some friends, and it calls on Muslims or people from Muslim countries to honestly examine the jihadist and oppressive aspects of Islam. And I've already gotten some negative responses from my liberal Western friends saying that this was an inappropriate thing for me to be doing at a time when we needed to be working against anti-Arab and anti-Muslim prejudice. Are you finding it difficult to further your mission in this particular climate to walk that line between talking skeptically and critically about Islam and yet not appear to be anti-Islamic?
We are in an era when we have the best opportunity to talk about subjects that have not been addressed before. And if we don't do that, we have committed a great failure.
So
I have no problem in talking about them.
So you're welcoming the challenge.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Now, you have written about the difficulty of separating church and state in Islam. Could you just tell us, in your opinion, is it more or less difficult for Islam to have a separation of church and state, for there to be a secular Islamic society? Have a secular state and an Islamic civil society?
As far as the subject basically as such is concerned, it is almost impossible, because unlike whatever the general public belief is concerning Islam, Islam is not a plain, simple religion. It is a composition of religion, civil law, and criminal law. In other words, that is a government. The only way you can separate them is by introducing some sort of renaissance, the way it was several decades and centuries ago in Christianity, and separate the church from state. Same thing has to happen. Otherwise, it cannot be done. We are going to face a huge, big world conflict.
Now, you say that it's impossible to do, but Sharia, the particular interpretation of Islamic law, is a fairly recent phenomenon, right? It wasn't, it was not the nature of the state for until the 20th century.
The word interpretation is a key word in this sense that anybody who wants to euphemize or apologize for the troubles that we have can use his own interpretation, and the minute you enter into the field of interpretation, you have lost touch with reality, and you are going to create problems that even if it's being sort of covered away right now, it's going to surface tomorrow.
So you think that the whole question about whether Sharia is recent or not, that's just a matter of semantics?
It is.
Yeah. Now, you've also written that Islam went hand in hand with the spread of Arab imperialism, just as Christianity was used hand in hand with Western imperialism. What were the pre-Islamic traditions in Persia, that is Iran, and does anybody still practice them?
The religious society of old Iran before Islamic attack was basically Zoroastrianism. And in the same time in Iran, there were other religious movements like Manis and Mehregan, which one of the last kings of Iran in Sasanid dynasty managed to collect most of them in a banquet and kill most of them, and rest of them ran away and went to Arabia and helped Muhammad to come to power. So Iran, before Islam and before Muhammad was a different world, different country. There was freedom of thought, freedom of movement, as you have seen or you can read in the Human Rights Declaration of Cyrus the Great, and women were equal to men as far as being the top commanders of the Iranian Navy and being queens, not the wife of kings, but queens.
So you attribute the decline in the position of women and the decline in the tolerance of religious pluralism to the advent of Islam and Arabian Islam.
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. Cyrus the Great was, he was a Zoroastrian king?
He was.
Now, modern Muslim scholars, let's shift topic here for a second to the concept of jihad. And I understand that modern Muslim scholars are divided on this. There's, on the one hand, there's those who have a kind of spiritual orientation of it, that it's not at all a military thing, that it's only about waging a struggle with yourself. There are those who have a kind of defensive or just war interpretation of it, which is that you should only fight oppression or defend Muslim lands. Of course, that's the interpretation that Osama bin Laden used to justify his fatwa for jihad against the West, which was a defensive interpretation. And then there are those who have an offensive interpretation, which is that it says kill all infidels wherever you find them, and that's what Islam should do. Do you think that this debate that we're seeing, I mean, the president has weighed in on this, journalists all over the country and the world have weighed in on their interpretations of Quranic scholarship, which is completely ludicrous, all of them saying, oh, Islam doesn't really say that you should kill anybody. Do you think that this is a good thing, that we are, that the West is attempting to laud and celebrate more pacifistic interpretations of the Quran? Or is this just a perpetuation, kind of a patronizing perpetuation? Because people, if people read the book, they will understand what it says.
Oh, the question.
It's maybe a tough question.
No, it's a very beautiful, very strong, very pointed question. Jihad, the word jihad in Arabic, the general meaning is struggle. But it has got two different meanings in two different usages. As jihad, jihad means to work, to struggle, to try to do something. But when it comes to the other meaning, jihad is a enactment of a command of war. That's jihad. Mujahid is the one who fights. As far as going on the meaning of a person who struggles, Mujahid never applies to it. Mujahid is the person who does anything that he does. But in jihad, he's a fighter. He's fighting against all the infidels. And as far as interpretation of all those words are concerned, it is something that the euphemists use to try to dull the cutting edges of the words. And the usage by the apologists who are trying to cover the true meaning of the passages within Quran. Anybody who does that is committing a felony, a crime right now by clouding the minds of the readers.
So you definitely think that you believe that the militaristic interpretation of jihad is the correct one. Now, Turkey and other countries after World War II, after the colonial period, led by Turkey, had a secularist movement, a secular nationalist movement. And in Turkey, you had the most remarkable movement because they actually passed laws against the wearing of veils in schools and so forth. What were the failings of the modern nationalist secularisms in the Middle East that led to the advent of fundamentalism, that contributed or facilitated the rise of fundamentalism?
Another pointed question. Let me try to answer in this way. We Westerners have tried to make good use of any nation that we pleased for our purposes. And when the task was accomplished, we discarded them as used objects or subjects. That was done all over the Middle East. We'll go back, let's say, to Armenia. Armenia was enticed to join the effort by the Western world to fight against Turkey. And everything that happened when Arabic world got its help and freed itself from the Ottoman Empire, and when the Balkans freed themselves, all by the help of the Allied forces, the force that was supposed to help Armenia, Russia, was toppled, its government was toppled, and there was no help for Armenia, and 1.5 million Armenians were massacred. Now, that is beginning of the whole problem. The same type thing occurred during the Soviet Union, when they tried to contain Soviet Union and by use of the Islamic part of the Soviet population to weaken the government. They used all those subjects within the Soviet Union and countries out surrounding Soviet Union under the name of Green Belt. When Soviet Union toppled, they abandoned all those countries to be as they be, and there was no help there. Therefore, and also in Afghanistan, when trying to fight against Soviet Union, they created the force, especially United States, created the Taliban, all the fighters, they trained them. Then after the Soviet Union was toppled, they abandoned them. All those people have certain feelings. They feel that they have been used, abused, and abandoned. And the only thing that they can depend on is their faith, and to the worst part of their faith. They use kuffar against us, and they fight against us.
So you're attributing the rise of fundamentalism and the fall of secular nationalism to the bad faith on the part of the West, that we weren't sufficiently supportive of secular nationalist governments?
Nothing is 100%, but yes, most of it I do.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that one of the upsides of this current conflict, this war against terrorism, where we have strongly tilted, in order to create this coalition, we've strongly tilted in the direction of embrace of regimes which I think in many cases for good reasons we had kept at arm's length because they were dictatorships and very ruthless and sponsors of terrorism themselves. But in any case, we have embraced Pakistan, we've embraced Syria, we've attempted to embrace the Sudan and Iran and other countries. Do you think that this new embrace lays a new foundation for a rapprochement between Muslim countries in the West, and possibly will strengthen the hand, ultimately, of moderates and liberals inside of those countries?
I wouldn't trust any one of them. Basically, a Muslim acts as a collective. Any Muslim, if he is really truly, she or he is really truly a Muslim, when the command for jihad comes, when fatwa comes, it is his duty to act accordingly, and he cannot deviate, otherwise he will have to forfeit his life.
Speaking today with Armin Saginian. Armin Saginian is the director of New Horizons, an Iranian outreach program of the Council for Secular Humanism, and is working to promote democracy, secularism, and rational inquiry for people of Iranian origin. I mean, this, I've always struggled with this myself. I'll just give you a brief self-disclosure here that I used to work with democratic socialists who were religious in a kind of ecumenical coalition, and then eventually I began to feel that it was in bad faith that I did so, because since I was an atheist and a humanist, the only reason I was working with these liberal religious people was because I considered their liberal religion to be kind of like atheism 101, a kind of a transition from them on their part from the orthodoxies to secular humanism. And I still go back and forth about that, whether it's good to encourage or work with people who have liberal interpretations of religion, because they are going to be far more influential than the small group of humanists and secular humanists around the world. So, I mean, do you feel that a kind of tactical coalition can be formed with people who have liberal interpretations of Islam, or do you really stick to your guns here?
Well, let me put it this way. Litmus test comes when an order of fatwa comes in, and then you have to see the reaction or action of the Muslim as to how he positions himself or herself. On this sense, that let's say that I was a Muslim. I have never been. And let's say that I tolerate everything and everybody, but yet I have to live with my Muslim society. And with them, I have no choice but to act the way everybody does. Now, if all of a sudden, in the middle of the road, I do not do what is expected of me, then my blood becomes halal. It is a duty of every Muslim to kill me and possess all my possessions. That is the way Sharia reads. And you cannot interpret it in any other way. That is the law. And it is heavenly law, not law put down by people. Therefore, you cannot negotiate it.
Has the Shia interpretation of jihad been different from the Sunni interpretation? Is it more militaristic or less? Because this particular Osama bin Laden sect of Wahhabism seems to be the one that's particularly violent and inspiring a lot of the suicide activity. Has the Shia interpretation of revolutionary Islam been different in its jihadist aspects?
Man, another pointed question. The basic difference between Sunni as Shia is this, that Shias are militant, Sunnis are not. And Shiism came about and it was created by Iranians who wanted to defeat the Arabs and push them out of their country. Unfortunately, the web that they spun was of such a form and nature that they themselves got caught in it, and they became a prey. And as a nation, as human being, they lost all their personal identity. A Shia has to have, he has no choice but to have a mujtahid. Mujtahid is the one who leads them. And he cannot decide anything for himself. And it is mujtahid who has to interpret the law and has to order him what to do. And as such, by reciting the verses from Quran, not even a leaf falls from a tree without the will of Allah. And you cannot say, I will do this tomorrow, because you have no will of your own. You have to always say, inshallah, if God willing, I will do this tomorrow. In other words, you are nobody.
Now, the system of government, we were talking earlier about separation of church and state, and you're talking about the fact that Shias in Iran are more clerical, have a more of a clerical organization than Sunnis, which have a more decentralized scholarship and mullahs and so forth. It's my understanding that the traditional Islamic idea of governance is that you would have a sultan who would be the ruler over a number of Islamic countries and would establish the supremacy of Islam over all these countries, but that you would not have a religious theocracy. So is theocratic government novel? Is it's only since the advent of the Iranian Revolution and now the Taliban that you've had Islamic theocracies. Isn't that correct?
Part of it is correct, part of it is not, in this sense. Whatever you said about the Islamic government in general from the beginning was true. And it came until Shiism was created by Iranians, but Shiism was not in the form that we have now. It was a militant, belligerent group that was fighting against Arab countries to keep Iran independent from Arabs and keep their national identity. However, when the Ottoman Empire started expanding westward as well as later on eastward, Europe could not resist them because they did not have the power to defend themselves until it came close to Vienna. And at the same time, Ottoman Empire started expanding eastward towards India. The very first country on their way was Iran. And the very first group that they faced with was a group of Iranians, a sect of Shiism led by the Sheikh Safi, which was in the north part of Iran. And they were really, truly practicing Shiites. And they are bloody enemies with the Sunnis. Although Turkish government had cannons and every kind of weaponry, but Iranians with horse and sword stopped the Islamic movement, or rather Ottoman movement. It grabbed the attention of the West, and two Shirley brothers were sent from England to see as to what it was that a ragtag army of Iran was able to stop the Ottoman movement. They came and found out that it was Shiism that stopped. They went back, reported, and then new group came to Iran, and they organized the Shia sect into a military form. From that point on, every city has got its own Ayatollah. Under Ayatollah, there are lower-ranking Sheikhul Islams. Under them, there are a huge group of mullahs that each one of them runs a mosque. So you have a whole pyramid of new government created within the government. This is religion. And that went on until Safavid dynasty came on and used the whole system. From that point on, Iran has been Shia, and the neighboring countries, some of them became Shia.
Iran has refused to support U.S. military action against the Taliban, and yet the Iranian government is a mortal enemy of the Taliban regime and its Wahhabist Sunni government. Is there concern that U.S. intervention in Afghanistan will strengthen Western influence there and threaten Iranian security, or is the opposition more a pan-Islamic ideological opposition, despite the differences of theology?
The fear is not from United States. The fear is from within Iran, because if United States manages to defeat Taliban and free Afghanistan from the grip of that stupid group, then within Iran, the movement that has already started will blow over and the regime will fall. They know it perfectly well.
So it'll be a pyramid effect of liberal democracy throughout the region? Perhaps not liberal democracy, but at least non-religious fundamentalism.
There won't be any more fundamentalism left. They will do away with the fundamentalism because people have had it.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe that Khatami is really a reformer, or is he going to be seen as a Gorbachev, a transitional figure, but not the person who's really prepared to lead it all the way?
To my belief, Khatami is playing a role right now, and his only duty is prolong the existence of this regime under the auspices that we will be able to change the regime. But look at it this way. Any time he opened his mouth and said things that probably he should not have said, Khamenei came on and said that he should not have said, and he changed the whole thing. Khatami will be over there as long as people will be still afraid to really take arms against the government. But the day most probably should come very soon when people will not be afraid anymore. They'll be willing to die. And at that time, the whole thing will be out.
Now, the U.S. has embraced Sudan and Syria and other countries that have been willing to provide some tacit support, or at least not come out against the war against the terrorism. And yet Iran has not. Iran allegedly facilitated a meeting between Hezbollah, Hamas, and the Bin Laden organization in April. Is this has Iran consistently supported Islamic fundamentalist terrorism? Is it a key player in this?
The beginning part of the Islamic fundamentalism started from Egypt when the Ikhwan al-Muslimin, or Brotherhood of Muslims, was created. Then Khomeini came and created a surrogate part of it under the name of Fedayeen Islam, or the Fedayeen of Muslim, or the Volunteers for the Islamic Cause. And both of those are totally fundamentalist and totally belligerent organizations. And from these organizations and whatever came from Pakistan, supported by the East India Company, and formed the fundamentalist basis in Iran, from that we have whatever problem we have in our hands right now. And it has to be dealt with. It has to be addressed. And there is no way around it, because they exist on the basis of fundamentalism. If you stop them, they will have to come out and fight. There is no other choice for them. It is either fight or die.
What is the next steps for your project? What other activities are you doing? I see that you're sponsoring a national, an international youth organization. You're holding classes around the country to support secularism in Iran. You have dramatic productions in the works. What are some of the projects that the council's working on?
One of the things that we learned was this, that fighting against religion directly is a stupid task, because the minute one starts attacking religion, eyes and ears close, and you have lost your game. We found out that, on the other hand, when a person goes back and falls on the Iranian culture, which is much, much older than Islam, it dates back to 6,000 years ago, then all the eyes and ears are open and the people are receptive to all the talks. We started from Iranian music, the Encyclopedia of Iranian Music, that covers 6,000 years of span of music in Iran, will be published hopefully a month and a half from now in Farsi language in 3 volumes, and then we'll translate it into English and print it into English for all the world to see as to what kind of a culture is being eliminated by the Muslims. And besides that, there will be the Encyclopedia of the Iranian Dance, Encyclopedia of Iranian Fine Arts, and everything that has to do with Iranian culture, covering all the distance from 5,000 years ago till now. And the response of the population, especially those in the United States, has been fantastic. We didn't expect that kind of a response. As a result of this work, we have 4 radio programs, some of them once a month, some of them once a week, and hopefully it will be some of them that will come up every single day.
I've been speaking today with Armin Saginian. He's the director of New Horizons, an Iranian outreach program for the Council of Secular Humanism. New Horizons aims to promote the ideals of secularism, democracy, and rational inquiry to people of Iranian origin. I really want to thank you for joining us. People can find out more about the work of New Horizons at cfiwest.org/New Horizons.
Yes.
New Horizons slash. And thanks again.
Thank you.
A long-haired preacher's come out every night, try to tell you what's wrong and what's right. But when asked about something to eat, they will answer in voices so sweet. Hey,
by and by,
in that glorious land in the sky,
work and pray,
live on hay. You'll get pie in the sky when you die. That's a lie.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. If you want to learn more about democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about today's show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, that's J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. At the Change Surfer website, you can find past and future shows archived in streaming MP3 thanks to the A-Infos Radio Project. Also at www.changesurfer.com are instructions on how to order copies of our shows and myriad relevant links. So educate, agitate, and organize. And I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.